I'm going to go down on this court tonight, watch. So. All right, guys, so it's great to see you. It's been, you know, I missed two in a row. So, but how'd you guys like Jeremy? So, you know, I'm really blessed to have Jeremy in my life. You know, God sometimes brings along, you know, some great people in our lives. And Jeremy, for me, is one of them. He's very, very best friend. And I get to not only be his friend, but we work together at Mighty Oaks. This weekend, we just did, we flew to Eugene, Oregon, and did a men's conference. We really had a men's revival. Actually, 20 churches was represented there. It was really awesome. And so we got to do that together this weekend. I want to hear a little bit of feedback, since I've been out for a little while, from anyone that can maybe give just an encouragement to me and let me know how any of this stuff that we're teaching has impacted your lives. Is there any kind of testimony or examples of something you learned in the program that you've applied in your life and had some results? Anyone? No one, I'm the only one. Go ahead.
It's myself, my wife, you know, listening to you talk about the fight plan, and you gave your real world example. One of the things you want to do with your wife is be kind to her. I'm not sure the exact term that you had in there, but I thought that was the same for myself. But, trying to restore my marriage with my wife, and certain things with myself that I find that I'm impatient with her. I've done some damage to our marriage, and yet now that I've allowed the Lord to change things in me, I expect fast results.
Yeah.
But just by seeing your example, looking at the margin, like I didn't realize I was getting so frustrated because I don't manage my time as well. I'm great to manage my time for business, but when it comes to my wife, not so much. So that has been a big impact, and being patient with her and just really listening.
Thanks. That was one of my next questions, actually, is fight plans. Are you guys implementing these fight plans, actually putting pen to paper, and being intentional and strategic about the things in your life that you want to fight for? Anybody? One more. I want to hear one more. It encourages me. Somebody else. Go ahead.
Just to defend your children, defend your family as a whole, being able to actually take those steps and, you know, being able to, you know, the whole book, the fight plan, to fight toward what we believe in Jesus Christ, you know. Yeah, you know, that's all has absolutely been a big encouragement to me and my family and what a lot of things I have gone through.
Yeah, you know, we look at what's going on in the world right now, and you turn on television and you see this chaos going on in the world. I mean, last week we had 17 kids, you know, that were shot and killed in a school. And actually tomorrow morning, I did some a couple of interviews this week, but tomorrow morning I'll be in Glenn Beck Radio, speaking with Glenn Beck about arming teachers and, you know, kind of controversial subject right now. But the true answer is not any of the following things, any legislation or anything. The true answer is, you know, we took God out of schools. We took God out of our communities, and now we're wondering what's going on and what's happening, you know. And so, you know, we can complain about that, but we need to get God back in our homes, in our own. And I say God, put God back in the churches, but that's some truth to that, getting God back in the churches in our country in the way it's intended to be, and getting God back in our communities. And that's where we see the real change take place. And so it starts here. It starts here in the local church with men just like you that are going to make a decision to align your lives with the very lives that you're created to live. And that's what this program is about. And it starts right there at home with fight plans that impact your children and your wives and your marriage and your relationships and your friendships and ultimately our community. So tonight we're going to talk about our common enemy, which is really ironic because it's a class really in spiritual warfare, and I am under some spiritual warfare in my own life right now, so I was preparing for this class. I was like, ah, man, it was just getting to me. So I'm probably going to be the biggest recipient of what we're going to talk about tonight. I want to use a story from Afghanistan. If you read the book, An Unfair Advantage, it's one of my books. The chapter is called The Girl on Chicken Street. And The Girl on Chicken Street. I'll tell you the story. So, when I was in Afghanistan, I usually lived, you know, off of a base. I lived out in the community in town, and you know, no child I would go to, so you go to the town and buy groceries, and just like you would here. And we usually once every 2 weeks or so make a grocery run, go buy some pirate DVDs for like a buck. And that's one of the great things about being a third world country. DVDs are cheap. And you buy these, people always say, well, you know, you can't take the money away from Hollywood by stealing these DVDs and buying them for a buck. Well, there's no copyright laws in Afghanistan, and it helps support their economy. So, we go to this place called Chicken Street, and Chicken Street's like a local. I mean, this has been around since the Brits were there. You know, in Chicken Street's been a trading post, right, after 1,000 years. And it's where, like, foreigners would go to buy rugs and stuff like that. And so it's a really popular area, but because it's a really popular area, it's also a high threat area. So the streets are blocked. You can't drive cars down it because they're worried about, you know, vehicle-borne IEDs and stuff like that. So it's really crowded, like shoulder to shoulder. And so me and my friend Bink, Banks is his nickname, and I got a picture of Bink up here. So Banks on the all the way this side. That's me over here. And my buddy Dave there, and the guy in the middle is a street kid we named Bob. And Bob was like this really tough street kid. And have you ever been in third world country, you know, kids come like around you and kind of start crowding you and asking you for things. And so we would just say, hey, Bob, punch that kid in the face. And Bob would punch the kid in the face, and they all were running off. And I wouldn't do that now, but back then too. Right, so Bob was like our little bodyguard, and he made sure that he kept all the other kids away when we go shopping. And so me and Dink were with Bob, and we went into this area that where we bought groceries a lot. And while we were there, we ran into these two little girls. And we'd always see these two little girls, and one of them, she was really distinct to recognize because her eyes were like really like bright aqua blue, you know, in the dark olive skin of Afghans with bright blue eyes. And you see this quite a bit. And she was about 9 years old, and she was selling some maps, and she sold newspapers. The newspapers there were written half in English, and if you flipped it over, the other half was in Dari or Farsi, which is the local language. And so we bought a bunch of stuff from her and paid her like 100 times the value just to have hook her up with some money. Her sister was with her, and as we were walking in past them, we noticed several ANA, Afghan National Army guys, which were policing the area. We went in a store, we did some shopping, and Bink bought two extra Pepsis for the little girls, just to be kind to them, and we walked out of the store and handed them their Pepsis, and the little girl smiled, and she said, Natasha Kerr, which means thank you, and Bink's trying to talk to her, and they're already, and we walk off, and while we're walking off, we got probably a block away, and we heard the loud concussion, boom, and if anybody's ever been around an explosion, you feel it, like through your body, it kind of takes air out of your body, so we're close enough to feel it. The air kind of gets sucked out of our lungs. And we turned back around and saw a cloud of dust coming up and saw people running and screaming. And, you know, we were there for shopping. We weren't there to fight. So we left, got in our car, and went home, and found out what happened from some of our local national Afghans that worked for us. And what had happened was a Chechen suicide bomber with a strap full of hand grenades to his chest was attacking those policemen, those ANA, Afghan National Army guys. And he went next to them and self-detonated. And the policemen were injured, none of the policemen were killed, but two kids were killed, and one of them was the little girl with the blue eyes from Chicken Street. And, you know, of all the things, like, in Afghanistan, what always kind of bugged me the most was the torment to the children, and to see these kids get killed like this. And I remember that incident, like, me and Bank being so upset, we just wanted to, like, go and, you know, take their revenge on bad guys. And really, those kind of things have really built a deep hatred inside of me for a long time. And we just, now we don't have to be in Afghanistan. We just turn our views and we see the brutality of this world. But again, the 17 kids last week, you know, a few months ago, somebody rented a Home Depot truck and ran down joggers and just crashed into a school bus, killing 8 people. And you see that kind of stuff and it can just enrage you. But outside of the anger that we can get from that as Christians, it can also be very confusing. I think it's can be a reason that many people don't believe or lose their faith. You know, if we don't have an eternal perspective on life, the evil of this world can really make us question our faith and what God's up to in all of it. It can make us ask the question that's taken many people from their faith. Why do bad things happen to good people? Anybody's ever heard someone say that before? Why do bad things happen to good people? Or maybe the thing is, right, a lot of atheists will say this, if there really was a God, then why would he allow evil to exist in this world? Right? Like I said, I'm preparing for this class. I'm going through some spiritual battle right now. I'm going through some tough times with my family, and it's really hard, and it doesn't feel fair. Me and my family are in ministry. We've been through so much, and we're just like pour our hearts out on other people, and we feel like we try to be as obedient as we can to God and as good as we can be, and we get something like this happen to my family, we're like, man, why? Like, why, God? Like, aren't we... Can't you help us through this? Can you not make this not happen? And I think many of us in our lives will find ourselves in that position and we ask that question. You know, why do bad things happen to good people? Why is this happening to me? Right? If there really is a God, then why would he allow evil to exist? Sometimes that could be a fair question. I don't think anybody that believes there is a God would think that God willed those two little kids in Chicken Street to be killed. I don't think it's God's like majestic plan to have a suicide bomber walk up and blow himself up. But could he have stopped it? Right, that's the question. Maybe God didn't will it, maybe God didn't make it happen, but could he have stopped it? Could the God who of creation, the God that's outside of space and time, that hung the galaxies and the universe, could he stop that from happening? Could he stop those little kids from dying on Chicken Street? Could he have saved those 17 kids last week? Could he stop the hardship that my family's experiencing right now? Could he? Of course he could, right? Of course he could. So why doesn't he? I've been asking that question this week. Why doesn't he step in and save us, rescue us, save the day? Why does he extinguish all evil? If we have a loving God, then why do bad things happen to good people? Well, first, I'll say this. It's important to know that none of us are good. That's a fact. None of us are good. There was only one good person, and it was Jesus. And so if you look at that scale, you have one good person, that's Jesus. And in the other category, you have all of us who are not good. And so you take that one good person and say, why do good things happen to bad people? Well, let's look at the life of Jesus, because it wasn't so great. He was born in a manger. He was cradled in an animal trough. He lived his life on the run. He was captured, tortured, persecuted, and murdered by his own people. Yeah, a lot of bad things happen to good people. He was the only good one. And he didn't have it happen so great for him. Right? So this leads me to believe that if that happened to him, it's kind of a heads up that the rest of us, right, that aren't in that good category, are not going to be exempt from some hardships as ourselves. And that maybe it's not God, but maybe it's a broken world that's the culprit. And there's got to be something behind it. There's got to be an evil force behind it. And that's going to take us to opening your books to our common enemy. If you're there, the first thing that starts off saying is, what is really going on? What's really going on? What are we really facing? Letter A says, since the beginning of time, a dark spiritual force has been at work against us. A dark spiritual force has been at work against us. In Ephesians 6:12, it says, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the principalities, against the powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. We're a part of a war. You were born into a battlefield. It's a spiritual battlefield that we're all engaged in, and it doesn't matter if you believe it or not. Either way, you're immersed in it 24/7, every second of every day, you're at war. If you don't see it, you're only going to be a victim of it. Another quick story from Afghanistan. My friend Bank, I love telling Bank stories. You always get that one friend, you always love telling Bank stories. He's a kind of crazy guy. I could sit up here all day. It would turn into a stand-up comic. But Bank's he's hyperactive, Copenhagen. He'd always be spit bottles all over the house that we lived in there. Of Copenhagen, he's always drinking coffee, so he's always really wired. And one morning I woke up, and he must have been up early because he had already drank a pot of coffee, and he was real antsy, and he's already dipping. And as I come down for my cup of coffee, he's like, hey, did you hear the rocket shoot across our backyard? We're living in Kabul, Afghanistan, and the combat's gone. I should have been aware of a rocket that shot across the backyard. I'm like, whatever, mate. Nobody shot a rocket across that backyard. He's like, no, somebody shot a rocket across that backyard last night. It hit a few houses down. He's like, and so I continued to kind of blow him off. And then I seen our guard. We had a little guard in our backyard. He's looking over the fence. And so I go out and look over the fence. And sure enough, the house, one house over from us is rubble, where a rocket shot across that backyard and hit it. And as I stepped down off the wall, when I was looking over, as I stepped back down, being sitting there drinking his coffee, he's like, told you, dude. Man, when did I become so complacent? Like, all the training, I'm there and, trying to stay, what do you have to say, right? Stay alert, stay alive. We got to stay alert, stay alive, especially when you're running around without any kind of support. It's kind of the nature of my job. And here I am, sleeping in my own house in a combat zone. I don't even notice a rocket shoot across my backyard. We could become so complacent, so numb, and so used to being in a battlefield. And like I said, you're born in a battlefield, that you don't even see the threats around you. Craig Rochelle talks about it like this. He says it's kind of like walking in a dark room. At first, you can see the darkness because you can't see anything else. All you see is the darkness. But the longer you're in there, the more your eyes adjust. You used to actually can see around you. You can see things. I think the longer we stay in the darkness, the less we can actually see the darkness. The longer I was in Afghanistan, the less scared I was, and the less the threat seemed real to me, and the more complacent I became, and the more vulnerable I became. And as I live life, sometimes, you know, we can get a little complacent and not realize that we actually are in a real battle. Whether you see it or not, we're in a real battle, and there's a real enemy out there lurking around to destroy you and your family and everyone around you. And I tell you, the biggest blows in our life, the biggest hits you ever get in combat in Afghanistan or right here in your life, are the ones you don't see coming because you're not prepared, because you became complacent. Letter B, the Bible clearly identifies our enemy as Satan or the devil. The Bible identifies who our enemy is and who we're up against. In order to win any fight that you're in, you know, you hear me talk about MMA fights, you hear me talk about being in Afghanistan, but as well as a spiritual battle that we're all in order to win any fight, you have to, one, recognize that you're in the battle. You gotta know you're in a fight. If you don't know you're in a fight, if you're naive to it or complacent to it, then you're gonna lose, because your enemy knows he's in a fight. You have to know you're in a fight. That's number one. Number two, you have to know who your enemy is. You have to know who you're fighting, so you can be equipped to fight against them. And your enemy is not God. When we say, you know, God, why? Why you allow this to happen? Why don't you stop this? God's not your enemy. Your family's not your enemy. Your wife's not your enemy. Your children aren't your enemy. Your friends aren't your enemy. Your enemy is Satan. And he wants nothing more than to deceive you that he even exists. Right? Because I can promise you, if you walk in that back door right there, with big giant wings and big teeth and dripping drool, everybody in here would be, for the rest of your life, you'd be on guard. You'd be like a spiritual warrior. The enemy doesn't want us to know that we're in a war. He doesn't want us to know he's our enemy. He wants us to think that, you know, God, why would God stop this? You know, our family's the enemy. Our friends are our enemy. Our children are our enemy. That's what the enemy wants us to think. But we have to know who our enemy is in order to be able to fight him. A first century fisherman named Peter knew exactly what I'm talking about. He didn't think this was imaginary at all. He was keenly aware of the sinister nature of the enemy. In 1 Peter, you see him write, 1 Peter 5, 8 through 9, he says, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. So resist him. Be steadfast in the faith, knowing that the same sufferings are experienced by your brotherhood in the world." Peter knew exactly what he was talking about because he had experienced this firsthand. Right? Jesus warned Peter during the Last Supper about the enemy. In Luke 22, 31 through 32, the Lord said to Peter, Simon, "Indeed, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you out as wheat. But I have prayed for you that your faith should not fail. And when you have returned to me, when you return to me, to God, strengthen your brethren." I want to talk about eight things that you can do to gain position over our enemy in this fight. There's eight things that we can do to be able to beat our enemy, Satan, as he tries to destroy our lives. Number one, submit and resist. James 4:7, "Therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee to you. It can be easy to say we submit to God. You know, we go to church. Most of you again here, we go to church every Sunday. You're probably professing a strong Christian faith, and you say you submit to God. But true submission requires a second part of that, to resist the enemy. And that part cannot be so easy. To say no. To say no to the enemy. To say no to our enemy is to say no to our selfish desires. To say no to our pride. To say no to our anger. To say no to our boyishness. To say no to the things that we want but aren't good for us or for the people around us. To resist the enemy is actually say no to the desires of our flesh. And while the first part of that, submit to God, seems easy, the second part, to resist the enemy, is a stumbling block for most of us throughout our lives. To say no to the temptations that we face in this world, to say no to the enemy. But actually, when we do say no, and if anybody's ever exercised this, you'll find that it's empowering, and it becomes a practice, and the more you do it, the stronger you feel, the stronger, more confidence you have. It's like being in a battle, and you think, there's no way I can win this battle, and then you win one little battle at a time, and then you realize, man, I could actually win the war. And that's what it's like to be able to say no to the enemy. When you're sitting in your house and somebody does something that you set you off and you just want to respond, which is anger, and you rise up and the anger rises up inside of you and you say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to control myself and I'm going to be God. I'm going to act in a godly way. Even though the enemy's whispering in your ear that you are wronged, that you have every right to behave this way, to set people straight, when you're able to behave in a way of godly character, and even surprise yourself because you're able to say no to the enemy. When you're alone at home and you got your iPhone out and you go to that private setting on your web browser, the one that doesn't make sure you don't have any history on there, and you go searching for porn, right? When you have that temptation and you're alone and no one else is going to hold you accountable and you can say no. I love that t-shirt, that phrase coming around, not today, Satan. That little win, that little victory in your life empowers you. It makes you realize that, hey, I can win this. If I can win this little battle, I can win the war. And the third part of that scripture is the enemy will flee. Right? Submit to God, resist the enemy, and then he will flee from you. If you're able to say those no's, man, the more you're able to do that, the less the temptation comes. Because the enemy will flee to you. The Bible promises it. The enemy will flee to you. Number two, rest and relaxation. In Genesis 2:2, it says, and on the seventh day, God rested. Right? On the seventh day, God ended his work, which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day, and all his work, which he had done. Right? If you think you don't get to rest, well, God actually rested. Now, I'm going to go right into number three and talk about them together. Simplify your life. Hebrews 12:1. Therefore, we also, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Right, rest and relaxation and simplify our lives. I'm terrible here. In fact, if you notice, Jeremy taught the margin class. That was because I didn't want to be a hypocrite coming up here. The margin class is so hard for me. This is one of my biggest struggles, guys. There's an old saying that I know because it applies to me so much, that if the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. If the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy. He'll keep you tired. He'll keep you unfocused. He'll keep you out of community with your brothers, and he'll keep you away from God. He'll keep you busy. And again, this is something I really struggle with. And my wife, while I was preparing this today, I practiced it from my wife one time first. She's like, yeah, I tell him also what I tell you all the time. And you might have heard it here. Say no to the good things so you can say yes to the best things, right? Sometimes when we say no and when we being busy doesn't mean just being busy with bad things. Sometimes being busy can be busy with good things. And so sometimes we have to say no to the good things so we can say yes to the best things in our life, the things that God has in store for us, the things that he called us to do. Number four, pursue financial freedom. It's a big factor in your fight against the enemy, because the enemy uses finances to keep people in bondage. In Deuteronomy 28:12, it says, the Lord will open to you his good treasure, the heavens, to give the rain to your land in its season, and to bless all the work of your hand. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. Like, you should not borrow. Right? God's our provision, God's our blessing, and he doesn't want us to be binded by financial restrictions. The enemy doesn't want you to be in financial freedom. The enemy doesn't want you to be in freedom at all. And so financial burdens can bring a tremendous amount of stress into your life, right? Anybody know that financial burdens can bring a tremendous amount of stress in your marriage, in your life, and keep you in bondage, keep you from being free from that and kind of tied to it. And that bondage has many things. I think the one that it holds you most to is your time. Like, you think your most valuable commodity in life is money, but it's really time. And when you're financially restricted, then what you're really forfeiting is time. Because it's going to rob you of time. It's going to rob you of peace. It's going to rob you of your focus. I know this church does Dave Ramsey program. Highly encourage it. It's really changed not our financial life. It's changed our marriage, because my wife and I were never on the same page. I say never. We weren't on the same page for most of our marriage when it came to finances. And it caused a lot of strife in our home. Not financial strife, just disagreements on how we spent our money. I mean, we did Dave Ramsey, it really brought us on the same page. It really brought a lot of healing in our marriage. Stress that we didn't even know where it came from. came from that. One of my favorite quotes of Dave Ramsey is, act your wage. I think a lot of us can learn from that. So, and if you want any information on it, so again, the church office will probably have dates. I don't think those want to go on right now. Yeah? Number five, stay connected. Stay connected. This is important, guys. This is why we're all here. This is the reason we meet every other week instead of every week to teach, because I believe that the brotherhoods and relationships, if you guys build in your groups, is more important or as important as anything we're going to teach. Because when this thing's over, when you move, whatever changes in your life, those relationships are going to be, God's going to bring in that brotherhood with each other, about to lean on each other in a hard time. So stay connected. Ecclesiastes 4:9 says, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him. And a threefold cord is not quickly broken. A key strategy of the enemy is to divide you. And I mean, guys, I spent most of my life learning how to destroy the enemy, how to fight. That's been my profession. And I tell you, one of the most effective strategies that you can have towards the enemy force is to divide them. To cut off supply lines and to cut off reinforcements. The guy with the biggest gun, the guy with the highest rank, the guy with the radio, that's my first target. If I could kill that guy, I'm going to disrupt that team. I'm going to break apart that team. I'm going to divide them. That's the guys I'm going after. Like that's a strategy of the enemy, and it's a strategy of Satan as well, to divide us, to break us apart. And there's a story we were talking about the other day. I can't remember. I think I was talking about it with you. There's a story I love from the Bible. I mean, not from the Bible, from my marriage book. So it talks about Satan in his last days, right? So Satan's like, the end of the days are coming, and God gives Satan a few more days on earth to kind of wreak his havoc. And so during this time, he starts closing shop. And Satan has a garage sale, right? If Satan would have a garage sale, he's having a garage sale. And at his garage sale, he's selling all the tools that he's used for thousands of years to destroy mankind. He's got them all on display. They all have a price tag on them. And this man's walking around. He's looking at all Satan's tools that he's selling. And he notices he's noticing the prices. He notices that one is way more expensive than the rest of them. It's $100 million, right? If I could throw a number on it. $100 million. It's twice as much as any other tool. And so the man's like, why does this tool cost so much more than the rest of them? And he's looking at it. It's just like a triangle-shaped piece of wood. And he asks Satan, why is this more than the rest of them? And Satan says, this tool has been my most effective tool to separate people from one another, to destroy marriages, to destroy churches, to destroy families, to destroy legacies. And Satan explained that this was the wedge. He said, I could use it to divide things that God intended to be together. And I could even use it to separate man from God. The wedge, right? The enemy's number one strategy is to divide us. This is his first effort in the battlefield. If he could separate us, if he could isolate us, make us feel alone, right? This thing we're doing here, this group, is meant to build relationships with other like-minded men who are pursuing the things of God. Don't lose that as you do this. Stay united with one another. Number six, meditate on Scripture. Psalm 119:11. Your word I have hidden in my heart that I may not sin against you. There's no weapon, guys, more powerful on the real battlefield, the physical battlefield, I won't say the real one, but also on the spiritual battlefield. There's no weapon more powerful than the Word of God. When you're at your darkest moments, when you feel like you're losing, there's no weapon more powerful than the Word of God. And you may say, well, that's not the real world. I'm telling you, it's the real world. Seek it out. Study it. Learn it. Don't wait till you're in the chaos of the moment. It's just like being in combat. I don't wait till I'm in the chaos of the moment to figure out what I do. We train in advance, every scenario, rehearse it thousands of times. That's what learning the Word in advance is about, because when you get in those chaotic moments, you're able to go back to the Word. It's like a secret weapon over the enemy. And it has power and authority over the enemy when you can speak it out in those dark times. Number seven, turn and run. I could probably end there. You guys already know what I'm going to talk about. Turn and run. Right? When you see something, you turn and run. If you walked out of that door and somebody was standing there with a hand grenade about to blow themselves up, you'd probably turn and run, right? Well, when we see something, some kind of temptation, whatever your temptation may be, that's going to destroy you, just the same, you turn and run. In 1 Corinthians 10:13, it says, God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted, but beyond what you're able. And some of you think, well, you don't know the temptation that I have, right? Man, the word says it, I believe it. You may think a temptation is something you can't handle, but it is. It's something you can handle. You just have to go back to the beginning, to where I said, you just have to say no. It may not be convenient, it may not be what you want, it may not be something you think you can manage, but you have to say no. And you gotta get into practice to say no, because God is faithful. He will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you're able, but with the temptation, will also make the way of escape, that you may be able to bear it. God says any temptation that we face, that we can bear it. He's gonna make a way of escape. It's not gonna be something that we can't bear, even though we may feel that way. We're all grown-ups here. You know what's good, you know what's bad. You know what's wise and you know what's foolish. No one needs to tell you. It's sown in your heart. You know instinctually what it is. And as believers, you even know more so. No one has to tell you, right? You know, but why would you choose death over life, good over bad? You know, why would you? Well, we do it every day. We do it every day, and we can't receive God's best for us when we do that. I mean, when we're living in sin, when we're choosing things that we shouldn't choose, we can't receive God's best. And so, you know, we'll look at something and say, man, why can't I have that? Why can't I have this life that I want, this thing that I want? And meanwhile, we're holding on to something that's not God's best. Something, in fact, that we're tricked to hold on to from the enemy. There's this thing in South America that they use to trap monkeys. Some of you may have seen it. It's like this little cage, and they tie it to a tree. And in this little cage, they put a piece of fruit. And there's this hole that the monkey is just big enough, the monkey gets kind of fit his hand through it and grab that piece of fruit. And once he gets his hand inside the hole and he grabs that piece of fruit, his fist now is too big to pull out of the hole. And he's trapped. And this little thing is so greedy that it will not let go of that piece of fruit. And it literally traps itself until the people come in and catch the monkey, kill it, eat it. Right? And as silly as that monkey may seem, they're like, just let go of the fruit, stupid. Like, and you're free. As you watch that, you think, how dumb is this thing? That's you guys. That's me. That's all of us. We sit here and we stick our hand where we shouldn't stick it. We hold on to something, and all we have to do is let it go to be free. But our pride and our greed and our selfishness, we won't do it. We won't let go of the sin in our lives and the things that tempt us and the things that we want so bad to be free. And just like that monkey dies, it literally will kill us. Metaphorically, literally, spiritually, there's going to be major consequences because we won't let go. I was just talking to my son, Hayden, my youngest son, and I'm like, you have this apple in your hand, and it looks like a really good piece of fruit, and you hold it onto it tight, but inside you know it's rotten. You know you won't even bite into it because you know if you bite into it, it's going to be rotten. And I was going to say, you know, there's this great orange over here, but he's my 18-year-old kid, so I said, and then God has this like big bag of Sour Patch Kittles over here. And all you gotta do is let go of this rotten apple, and you can have that bag of Sour Patch Kittles, but you just won't let it go. And, you know, that's just like that monkey, that's us. Right? We hang on to the things that we know we shouldn't be holding on to. And the whole time we're holding on to it, not letting it go, we can't release it to grab the very thing that God has for us, because our hands are full. The presence of Jesus Christ, number 8. It's the last, but definitely not the least. It's the number 1. Number 8 is the presence of Jesus Christ. This is what we need to gain position over our enemy. Matthew 28:20. I am with you always, even at the end of the age. Every man's challenge is this: to be able to overcome the spiritual battle against the enemy. And it starts with the relationship with God. Acts 2:21, and it shall come to pass that whoever calls on the name of the Lord shall be saved. Our key to victory is a relationship with God. In my book, An Unfair Advantage, I wrote this: God has provided spiritual armor for every warrior. And I write this down. Read Ephesians 6, 10 through 18. That's the spiritual armor. God has provided spiritual armor for every warrior. And when we walk boldly into the battlefield, wearing the spiritual armor of God, it gives us an unfair advantage. Right, the kind of trick word to that in my title there, an unfair advantage is we can win any battle. It's like cheating when we're in a relationship with God. We have an unfair advantage over the enemy. He can't win. He can't win if we're in a relationship with him. For we have the sure knowledge that no matter what fate befalls us, no matter what it looks like, no matter how much of a failure it looks like, no matter how down we feel, because we're in a relationship with him, our eternal destiny is secure. And because of that, we can't lose. And so with that knowledge and with that confidence, we can fight as true warriors and find victory in battle, because we know no matter what, if we're in a relationship with him, we can't lose. There's no losing. Being equipped to fight the spiritual battles is it starts with a relationship with Jesus. And no one can do that for you. That's something you have to do. And if you hadn't done it yet, you should have probably by the time you end this program, if you hadn't done it yet, like, don't walk out that door without finding me or one of the other pastors, because we want to tell you how. You have to start it there. You have to be in a relationship with Jesus. But it's your choice. Again, no one can do it for you, but also, no one can take it from you. No one can keep you from it. No matter where you're at, no matter how bad your situation seems, no one can do it for you, but no one can stop you from doing it. Not even Satan. Being in a relationship with Christ is not going to exempt you from being in this battle, right? You guys that are Christians for a while, you know, being in a relationship with Christ, not only will it not keep you from being in a spiritual battle, but it probably will get worse, right? I'm in full-time ministry, and again, share with you tonight, you know, my family's under attack right now, and so it may increase. But there's no greater attack than an high-value target, right? The high-value target is who you go after. So if you're under attack, kind of like almost, it sucks, but you're like, all right, maybe I'm doing something right. Like, the enemy's coming after me, so maybe I'm doing something right. I'm getting attacked for a reason. And Jesus said this, he said it to believers, right? Jesus said this to us as believers. He said, if the world hates you, keep in mind that it hated me first. If you belong to the world, it would love you as its own. As it is, you do not belong to the world, but I have chosen you out of the world. That is why the world hates you. Remember what I told you. A servant is not greater than his master's. If they persecuted me, they will persecute you also. If they obeyed my teachings, they will obey yours. They will treat you this way because of my name, for they do not know the one who has sent me. And if you're being persecuted, don't forget that Jesus was persecuted first. This is in John 15:18. You guys want to read it. Guys, you are in a battle. But again, whether you see it or not, whether you believe it or not, or you think it's, you know, kind of fantasy or not, you cannot believe there's oxygen in your room, but guess what? You're still sucking it in. Right? You are in a spiritual battle. But the only way to win it is to be prepared, to know you're in a battle, to know your enemy, to equip yourself. Right? And I also say, you got to get on a winning team. Getting on a winning team means in a relationship with Jesus. Because a spoiler alert, like I'll tell you, I've read the end of the book, and we win. We win, God wins. So you want to be on the winning team, right? And again, if you're not there yet, then we want to help you be able to do that. But can I pray with you? Lord, I'm just so thankful for these men, and I'm so thankful that as each of us are in our own spiritual battles, Lord, we're all in this battle together. We're all here united together. You brought us together, Lord. Wherever we came from, even those who may be guests here today, you brought us together, unified us as a team. We have each other to lean on, to call on when we get attacked, that we were not divided, Lord. And I thank you that you've equipped us, Lord, with the spiritual armor and your word, or to your word, to speak your word over the end of it that has an intent on destroying us, dividing our families, our homes, our churches, this country. Lord, and this world, Lord, I'm just thanking you that you've equipped us to win this battle. And I thank you in advance for the victory that you're going to have over the enemy once and for all, when Satan's out of the picture. And I thank you in advance for that, Lord. I thank you that you chose us through a relationship with Jesus to be on the winning team. I thank you for that, Lord. Thank you for these men. In Jesus' name, amen.